I remember I got Paul Rabil warming me up, and I'm still really bad switching between defense and goalie. And I just remember he hit me like right under the armpit, which I don't even really know how you get hit there. And it was still to this day probably one of the worst bruises I've had. And it made me quit goalie for the better part of a year until like seventh, eighth grade.
Welcome to the Lax Goalie Rat Podcast. Every week, we'll be talking shop with lacrosse goalies, coaches, and special guests. This is the Lax Goalie Rat Podcast. Now your host, Coach Damon Wilson.
Ladies and gentlemen, goalies from around the world, welcome to the Lax Goalie Rat Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Damon, and this is the show 100% dedicated to what I think is the best position in sports. That's the lacrosse goalie. On this show, it's my job to track down the best goalies in our sport, interview them, find out what makes them so great. What are the drills that they do? What are the mindsets that they have? What are some lessons that they learned along the way in their lacrosse goalie career that they can share with you? My guest on the show this week, we're continuing with Johns Hopkins week. Last episode, we interviewed the female goalie, which is Kat Garvey. This week, we got Big Josh Kersen. Started his career at the Ohio State University, and even before that, played at the legendary Hill Academy, which we talk about quite a bit. Played at the Ohio State University and then decided, I've got more eligibility. My lacrosse career is not done. Transferred over to Johns Hopkins, where he's now the current starter and having a great season for the Blue Jays. Great episode with Josh. We really break down some of his techniques and get into the weeds about, you know, what he's doing and what he's thinking about. I know you're going to learn a ton in this episode, so please enjoy this conversation with Hopkins goalie Josh Kersen. This episode is brought to you by the Lacrosse Goalie Summit 6. March 28th through April 1st, we've got 12 of the best lacrosse goalie coaches in the business lined up to give you free presentations, free coaching sessions on different elements of lacrosse goalie play. It's going to be an amazing event. If you're a goalie, if you're a goalie mom or dad, if you're a coach who needs to work with the goalies, I definitely recommend attending this event. The goal of this entire thing is to level up your goalie game. Guaranteed you're going to get inspiration. You're going to learn a ton about the goalie position, things that you never even thought about, things you never knew, or maybe even just a new way of looking at things. It's going to be tons of fun. We got a lot of giveaways from our sponsors, so we'll be giving away free lacrosse goalie product as well. To get a ticket, it's free to sign up, absolutely free to attend live. You can get a ticket at goaliesummit.com. Goaliesummit.com. Get a free ticket. You'll then, after you sign up, have the opportunity to buy the VIP pass, which is replays to everything. But first, you got to go to goaliesummit.com and get signed up. I'll see you on March 28th. Going to be awesome. Pleasure to welcome to the show Hopkins starting goalie Josh Kersen. Josh, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
I know. Awesome shot. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. I mean, we're going to have a good time chatting goalie for the next hour here. A lot of good stories I want to hear from you along the way. But the first story I want to hear starts right back at the beginning. You remember the first time you jumped into goal?
I do remember. I started playing lacrosse in fourth grade, and I originally was not a goalie. I was a defenseman. Probably one of the most unathletic defensemen in fourth grade lacrosse. And I wasn't I always got criticized for not getting in the GB piles very much. I used to just kind of stand back. And then fifth and sixth grade came around. I remember, I think sixth grade was probably the first time. You always hear like there's only a couple of reasons why kids start playing goalie. I was no exception. We didn't have a goalie. I was probably the biggest kid on our sixth grade team. So our coach was like, you're stepping in. And I stepped in and I really liked it. you know, a bunch of balls hit me because nobody's very good at that point, and I thought I was pretty good. And then I went to a camp. I'm from Boston, so I went to a Boston Cannons camp at the time, back in Boston. And I remember I got Paul Rabil warming me up, and I'm still really bad switching between defense and goalie. And I just remember he hit me like right under the armpit, which I don't even really know how you get hit there. And it was still to this day, probably one of the worst bruises I've had. And it made me quit goalie for the better part of a year until like seventh, eighth grade, same situation kind of happened again. My mom really didn't want me to play at that point, but team needed me. So I stepped in again, and I started playing it more often, started playing it club, and that's kind of how I got going. So
that's great. A great story. So the legend Paul Rabil almost knocked you out of the goalie position at a young age.
Made me quit.
He's supposed to be the ambassador of the game, and here he is out there just knocking young goalies out of the sport.
Yeah. No, it's funny because I think one of the first pictures of me affiliated with lacrosse is at a Hopkins game. Most of my family is from the Baltimore area, is at a Hopkins game, and I'm like 3 feet tall with a Hopkins jersey that's way too big, taking a picture with Paul Rabil. So I got the picture, and then I got the bruise from him, and now to be at Hopkins. So fair share of Paul Rabil, but no, it is a funny story. And I think he apologized, so we're all good.
All right. Good. If not, if he starts listening to this podcast, you owe him one. I love it. So how did you then, you know, at that young age, you kind of decide for the second time, hey, I'm going to give it another go. Right. You know, how did you go about learning the position?
Yeah. So at the school I went to, Rivers, the coaches for the varsity team were also the, you know, like founders and owners of the club team that I played for, the Top Gun Fighting Clams. So kind of an easy connection in there, but we had through the head guy, Justin Walker, I had a goalie coach at Rivers named Troy Peters, who's an outstanding goalie coach. And then at the Clams, another guy, Ronnie Westgate. So between those two guys, I was probably on top of practice, getting private goalie lessons. Thanks to my parents for that. But getting, you know, I was getting extra work more days a week than not, probably at least 3 or 4 days a week, just getting reps. And I think, you know, it's hard to get better without a really good goalie coach. And I was kind of spoiled in that regard. So, kind of always had that luxury.
Well, that's great if you can do it, right? I mean, they probably showed you, like, here's how you stand. Here's how you step to the ball. Here's your save movement and all that good stuff. And then, like you said, just reps and reps and reps. And they probably showed you a few drills along the way that, like, hey, this is you got a little hitch. You got a little problem in your game, let's do this drill to get out of it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, nowadays, you know, you got the Goaliesmith guys and you got like all these different goalie academies, if you will, and, you know, resources online that can help you. But I kind of, I just got pretty lucky, you know, getting to play for, you know, Troy has coached a lot of goalies out of the New England area who have ended up being really successful. I think he has the save percentage record in Division II. And, you know, Ronnie was a D1 goalie as well. So I kind of had two guys who had a wealth of knowledge before the whole social media time. And mm-hmm. It was a little bit harder to get, you know, get coaching at that point. But I got pretty lucky. And I also, you know, I learned how to play goalie. You're familiar with Connor Darcy, but we kind of learned how to play goalie from Ronnie at the same time. So not only was I learning from great coaches, but I was being pushed by guys who were for friends who were better than me at the time too. So that was really helpful. And it's always more fun when you're playing with other guys. It's hard to go out and see a million shots by yourself. So it's it was fun.
Yeah, love it. Love it. What for you would you say is your favorite part about being a goalie?
That's a good question. I think the goalie is kind of the quarterback of lacrosse. You have the best seat in the house. It might be the highest, in my opinion, it is the highest pressure position. It requires a ton of trust. And I like being in that seat. I think, it's a huge responsibility. And I also think, a lot of times the best goalies are really good teammates, and oftentimes there are guys that the rest of the team really wants to play for. And if you can earn that respect and that trust, I think that's pretty cool. So I would say that's probably my favorite part of being a goalie, is just, being the guy that hopefully your teammates want to rely on, and being in that pressure position. It all kind of, there's a lot of scheme and a lot of things that go into goals and defense and all that, but the buck kind of stops with you. So you are kind of that guy, the last line of defense. So I like being in that seat. It's definitely not for everyone, but I think it's pretty fun.
Yeah. Same here. Yeah. It's an interesting point about goalies being great teammates too. It's like, as I think back through the teams I played for, I like to think that I was a great teammate, but all the other goalies that I played with, that statement's so true. It's like, I don't know, they're real team guys, and just, love the game, are in it for all the right reasons, and, just bust their butt out there. So that's an interesting comment.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a ton of talented goalies in Division I lacrosse. I think most of the goalies who are in Division I lacrosse are really talented. And, when you take away the talent, there's some other characteristics that really make guys stand out. And, there are discrepancies in ball stopping ability and that stuff, but, you can earn ways to the top through other directions too. You talk about like Brian Dougherty, guys like that, Brett Queener, who had the legs, and like, there are other ways to, get your teammates going. And it's not just one quality. So I think people see goalie as kind of a singular position, but you can be a pretty well-rounded goalie, and it's important, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. It's especially important too, to be a good teammate. Like on D1 programs, you guys got, I don't know how many goalies you got in the roster, like four or five, something like that.
Yeah. Usually four or five. We have four right now, but I've been on teams with three. I've been on teams with six. So
yeah,
anywhere in that range, but it's usually like one a class.
Yeah. 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 Two. I played in the MCLA back in 2000. And so it was like the starter and the backup. And so it was just two goalies. And it was like, there was, at least on the teams that I played on, there's a very clear differentiation between like, this guy's the starter, this guy's the backup. But when you have that big group of goalies, now becoming a teammate and pushing each other, but at the same time, being a great teammate, it's like this interesting balance between like, we're going to fight like heck, right, out on the field. But at the same time, like, we're going to be really good friends. Right. And you guys have that dynamic at Hopkins right now.
Yeah, I think we definitely do this year. And I think that's a really good point too. The best goalie rooms that I've been in, and I've had some really good years, and I've had some years that, were kind of below my standard. And I think there is a direct correlation between like how much the goalie room is pushing each other, and maybe when that competition doesn't exist as much, and it really does have an effect. I mean, I think maybe for some guys it wouldn't. I think I probably play better when I am being pushed. And, I would even say, as a 6-year goalie, I would even say I kind of need it. Mm-hmm. I think probably the worst year of my career was a time when we only had three goalies, and one was a walk-on first year, and one was a freshman. And they were great goalies, but I was like the only one with experience, and I didn't feel the competition as much. I don't know if it existed as much, and that was probably my worst year. And the best years have just been like when I'm fighting for the spot every single week. And practice is just as important as the game at that point, because you're not just fighting to win games, you're fighting to be in the net, period. And I think that brings out the best in all goalies, in my opinion.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. How would you describe your style of goalie play, just in terms of stance and your steps and, you know, kind of, your entire style?
Yeah, I would kind of describe myself. I've definitely switched things around. I think it's natural to be switching things around, but overall, I think I probably play on, I'm a bigger kid, so I kind of play on a flatter arc as opposed to some smaller goalies who might play on a really high arc towards the top of the crease. I kind of play flatter with a wide base as well. I tend to keep my feet outside of shoulder width, although I've started to bring them in a little bit this year, which has helped. I also try and play my angles pretty well. You know, as a flat goalie, I try and take up as much of the cage as possible, and on low angle stuff, I tend to come out a little bit and break down those angles as well. So that's kind of how I would describe myself in the net. I also pride myself on being able to clear the ball pretty well. I think that's one of my strong suits. Solid communicator, not the best of all time, but as long as my guys in front of me can hear me. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. We'll break down some tape a little bit later. I got some awesome clips I want to talk through. But yeah, that kind of matches exactly what I'm seeing as well. I'm curious why you said, you know, you're a wide base goalie. This year you're going a little bit more, you know, a little bit more narrow. What has that done for you, and why did you make that change?
Yeah. So this is something I talked with my coaches and a lot of people about, but you know, since I started playing goalie, there have been some guys that I've watched who have kind of shaped my game, and I'm always watching other goalies. I don't think that you should be stuck in your own ways by any means. I think if you're watching other goalies and you see things that work for them and you want to try it in practice and it ends up working, you might as well use it until it doesn't work anymore. And you can constantly switch little things around to make them work. I remember, like, I kind of based my wide stance off of a old Notre Dame goalie named John Kemp, and I watched a lot of Jack Kelly. You know, they kind of helped shape my original stance, so that kind of plays in. This past year, I've been watching a lot of Blaze, and I just really like the way that, you know, first of all, he's just so good at anticipating where shots are going, and that's not what I changed, but I just like how comfortable he is, and he's super comfortable in the net. He doesn't really ever look rigid in his arc and his stance. He just looks very, very calm and comfortable. Not that he doesn't have any movement, because he does, but he's never in, like, his feet aren't wide or skinny. They just are kind of where he wants them to be. So I've been watching him, and I think, you know, just trying to be a little bit more comfortable in my stance has naturally made me a little bit skinnier. And I think it has positively affected me. So kind of been sticking with it. I'm still pretty wide compared to other guys, but I used to be like, you know, one of my stances would take up like more than half the,
like DeLuca, Matt DeLuca style.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm like 3 or 4 inches shorter than he is. So
yeah.
That really limits my movement. So I've kind of tightened it up a little bit, and I think it's been good.
Yeah. How do you, one of the questions that young goalies ask me, I'll ask you the same question. So when you make a change in your game, it's uncomfortable at first. It typically is, right? Like you're just kind of not used to it. And so like, you know, I say this all the time, this, the exact same thing that you just said, which is, hey, you know, try different things out. You know, if you're narrower base, try a wide base, like see what that does for you. Like, see if you like it. But at what point do you like get to determine like, yeah, this doesn't work versus fighting through that uncomfortableness? Does that make sense? What I'm asking?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think it's, excuse me. I think it's really important to pick your spots, and you really have to be committed to playing a lot if you want to do it, because
it's true. Yeah.
I think it's important in, you know, there are times in practice where that's not what you should be doing. You should be focusing on like what you do best. If you're in like extra, if you're getting extra reps, or, you know, you're in a practice space that's being filmed, and, you know, maybe just goalie work, I think those are the times where, you know, you can switch something up, and it doesn't have to be drastic. It could be like, you know, going from your eyes at like shoulder width to eye width, like bringing your stick up a little bit. It could be baiting a little bit. It could be stepping out a little bit. And it's going to feel uncomfortable. I think, you know, our goalie room right now, we do this all the time, but we'll try something and then we'll put it on tape and watch it, and then maybe make adjustments and find a middle ground with what works, and then implement it the next day. And if it works the next day and they feel more comfortable, because I think, you know, with the volume of shots we're seeing, mm-hmm. if you change something up, we're going to get a good volume with it in 30 minutes. It might be different for younger goalies, but I think picking your spots and having an idea of what you want to change is going to be important. Because if you're just changing things up because something's not working, you know, that might mess with your head even more. But if you're changing something up because you think it could give you an advantage and then it ends up working, then it makes you even better. And if not, then you just stick with what you're comfortable with, and you haven't lost anything either.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great answer. I love that point about, you got to see a lot of shots, and also there's a time and place to try new things, right? Like trying something drastically new day before a big game, probably not the best idea. Right. But, you know, if you got a couple of weeks and, you know, you're taking shots with some buddies on the weekends, like, hey, let's try something. And then for a lot of youth goalies, like when you're first starting, like the battle is not so much trying different things. It's just like consistency. You know what I mean? Like it's consistency with what, with a certain thing, like let's hold your hands in the same spot every single time. Cause a lot of youth goalies can't even do that. It's hard, right? Shots coming at you. Yeah. There's a lot going on. So learning to be consistent, then you can start making tweaks. Would you agree with that?
100%. And I think, you know, I remember as a middle school goalie, like I remember sessions where we'd start the warm up and then the whole hour would just be the warm up, and the shooter would just be moving around the arc, just doing the same spots for an hour. And that is the way to get better, right? Is to build consistency and muscle memory until the fundamentals are down. And then, you know, when you get to a high level, you can start to change things without the fundamentals kind of moving too much, which is really important, because your fundamentals are kind of the base of your game, and you should be able to go back to them. Like you should be able to do them in your sleep. You could put the stick down for weeks, pick them up, and still have all those same fundamentals. So as for young goalies, yeah, definitely just, you know, you could be doing the same four drills for weeks on end and it might feel really repetitive, but for our position, that's the way. Like there's no shortcut to it. There's no secrets to it. Like, you know, it's not unfortunate, but like there's no easy way to do it. You just go out and take shots and film it, and you just make sure that everything you're doing is consistent, right? And once you build that consistency, you can start advancing yourself.
Yeah. Josh, what do you do on the days where you don't feel like taking shots? I'm sure you've had those days. We've all had those days, right? You just, for whatever reason, like you're not into it. What do you do on those days?
Yeah. No, especially for me, because I'm a grad school six year goalie. So, recovery for me is really important. So, I'm not like Jack Webb, who's our freshman goalie, who's taking shots. You know, that kid's taking shots. I don't even know. He's got to have the record, which is an awesome.
Probably taking shots right now. He's probably out there right now.
Yeah, he's probably taking shots right now. 100%. I have no idea, but there are days where I won't take them. I think we have a good regimen right now. We're doing probably 3 extra sessions per week. You know, it's different in the season than it is out of the season, obviously, because you're seeing a lot more volume in the spring and the fall, you know, eager to take shots because you're really not taking any. But for me personally, at this point, days when I'm not taking shots, I'll probably be doing extra recovery, stretching. I'm a big yoga guy. Any goalie that I would coach, I like live and die by yoga now. I think it's been like probably one of the most helpful things outside of taking shots for me. So those are probably what I'm doing. If I'm not taking shots, I kind of think film is probably another easy answer. I think there's a middle ground there. I'm not, I think film is important. I'm not the biggest proponent of overwatching film because it gets into my head, and I like to just kind of, you know, there's definitely something to scouting shooters and watching yourself, but I like to have my mind clear and just be free when I'm playing and have a positive mindset, and I don't like to overcomplicate things. So it's not always film for me. It's more probably just getting my body right and getting ready to take more shots the next day.
Yeah. What do you think the yoga has, what specifically, what has yoga done for your goalie game?
Yeah, I'm not the most athletic guy, and I'm not the most flexible guy either. Throughout high school, my goalie coaches were telling me to do yoga, and you know, I thought I was too cool for school. I thought, yeah, there's no way you're gonna get me on a yoga mat. Like, no shot. I'm doing that. Kind of took me until sophomore, junior year of college when I started dealing with injuries that were keeping me out. And I, you know, my trainer, Angie, she was like, you got to start stretching more. So I started going to yoga that summer, and it was just like, you know, it's not going to be for everyone, but for me, it was coming out of every session. Not only do I feel physically better than when I came into it, but also yoga is a very mentally clearing practice. And for me, not only to feel like physically better, and you know, it builds injury prevention, it builds flexibility, which are both two really important aspects of playing goalie at a high level, but to also clear your mind at the same time. That like triple threat for me was when I'm out of the season, I'm probably doing it like 3 or 4 times a week. And I think it's awesome. I would recommend it to any goalie.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It builds up a lot of flexibility, certain exercises anyway, a lot of flexibility and strength in the hips too. And I think that's like the more that I talk with goalies and study the position, like that to me is one of the major keys, is like having strong and flexible hips is a major key to being good.
Yeah, definitely. And also the way that the position is being taught these days is it focused. I think there's a lot of ways to teach the position, but you know, the way that I think a lot of the really good coaches are teaching it now is all about explosion. Mm-hmm. And you know, really being strong with your explosion to the ball and having it at the right time. And that all comes from your hips, right? Like comes right from your core, from your center, from your hips. And, you know, it's not as much anymore about like symmetry as it is about how fast and how explosive can you get to the ball and get to the spot you need to get to. And that all starts from your hips. So totally agree.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Awesome. So going back to your story, you know, I imagine you start to see some, start to see some success in high school. You know, how did your high school career, lacrosse wise go for you?
Yeah. So, I was a 4-year starter, at Rivers. I went to I was at a place where it wasn't like a lacrosse factory, which I think works out for goalies. A lot of times you want to find a place where you can play. It's worked out, you know, for lots of guys going to really prestigious lacrosse schools as well. And there's pros and cons for both. For me, I think getting a lot of reps and getting game experience at a young age was good for me. So I started to have some success in varsity, and I started to have some success in club too. I was originally a 2015 grad. So I started getting recruited my sophomore summer for 2015 spots. And then I ended up like breaking both of my thumbs. So I missed some time, and my high school and my club coach said, you know, have you ever thought about reclassifying? And I hadn't. He said, well, you know, why don't I just, I'll reach out to some coaches and see, you know, if there's interest in you as a 2016. And if that's something that interests you, we can go down that road. And if not, you know, you'll just stay in your class. Mm-hmm. I think the day after he did that, I got some interest from a bunch of schools, and I went on a couple visits, and, you know, I stepped on campus at Ohio, had a good connection there, with the coaches, with the program, and, pretty cool going to a football game there as a sophomore in high school, getting on the field and all that. So, I made my decision to reclass, and I committed as a 2016 to Ohio State, which put me, to do a PG year after I graduated from Rivers. And I spent that year up at the Hill Academy in Ontario with Brody Merrill. And that was a really awesome year. I think, you know, it's a tough place for sure. Made some of my best friends there, but I'm not sure that you could go anywhere that would prepare you better for college lacrosse than that place, in terms of lifting and in terms of practice, in terms of travel. You know, you're traveling down the States by bus for every single game. So it's a big commitment, but it was awesome. And that's kind of how I capped it off. We had a really great year, and I was a product of a really great team, and got nominated to play in the Under Armour senior game before heading to Ohio State. So that was kind of my high school journey.
Love it. That's great. I got a bunch of questions for you. First comment is, yeah, of course, anytime, you know, you talk about recruiting at Ohio State, just go to a football game, right? That's gotta be such an awesome experience.
Beat it.
I mean, I love the football games at Cal, but like, I don't know. I just feel like that's just another level of, you know, of football, but it's awesome.
Yeah. Different species of humans, those guys.
Oh, tell me about it. Right. Yeah. I was always trying to recruit the Cal football players whenever I saw them like around campus to come out and play lacrosse with us, like guys who had like finished up and were like just there, you know, and a lot of them wanted to do it. But at the time we played on turf, like this really ugly, like, you know, super green turf. And they're like, I can't do it. My knees are all shot.
But we had similar things. We would, you know, our indoor field is right next to, it's really the football team's indoor field, but it's right next to their weight room, and guys would finish their lifts. I remember like Chase Young, he's from, I think DeMatha, he's a DC kid. So he was familiar with lacrosse, and he would come out to practice like all the time after lifts and just throw the ball around. And we'd be like, what is this guy doing associating himself with small people like we are? But that's awesome. No, it's cool.
That's awesome. Were you at the Hill Academy the same time as Brett Dobson, or He's probably a little younger than you.
Yeah. So Brett, I actually talked to him the other day, but he was there the same time as me. I think he was a sophomore, a junior, maybe grade 11 when I was there. So he was on the younger team at the time. So I didn't get to spend too much time with him. We had different practice times, but you know, I remember there was a buzz, and obviously anyone who knows about the Hill and about Lex Goalie Rat and Brett Dobson knows about the success that he's had. So yeah, it was a good group at the Hill that year.
Yeah. Sounds awesome. Some powerhouse of goalies up there, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's cool. I talked quite a bit about the Hill Academy and his experience. So if anyone wants to kind of understand what that's all about, you can go back and listen to his episode. That's cool. So then you commit to Ohio State. You know, you mentioned kind of just the chemistry of the team and the coaches. You know, what exactly does that mean? Is it just like a feeling you get? Like, how would you describe to a young goalie who's going through this recruiting process of like what to look for?
Yeah, I think it's different for everyone. Obviously, people and young guys and families might have things that they're looking for in the process. You know, for me, it was kind of just a feeling. But for my family, something that was really important was the coach and the culture and the way he was running the program. And Nick Myers is a New England guy. He's from New England, from Maine, and just a really down-to-earth guy. He really resonated with my family, and that was really important for me. So, we really connected with him, and you know, the facilities there speak for themselves. Also, another assistant coach at the time, Jameson Kester, who's now my D coordinator at Ohio, was really awesome. And he was kind of the leading effort on my recruiting at Ohio, and ended up, you know, I ended up committing in large part because of those two guys. And he ended up taking an offer at UMBC right before I got there. So it's been awesome to, you know, get 2 years with him at Hopkins, and kind of came full circle with that. But it was really just the connection with the guys at the top of the program, and you know, the facilities and resources you're getting for not only lacrosse but for academics too. They, you know, yeah. Ohio spends a lot on their athletes, and it's pretty evident when you go tour. It's pretty cool. So that's those are kind of the factors.
That is pretty cool. Yeah. I guess it was so 2017 was your first year at Ohio State.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys go to the national championship game.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah,
Not bad, huh? that must have been a pretty cool experience for you.
That was a special year for the program. So I, a week before I got on campus, I was playing in a men's tournament in Boston on some bad grass fields. And I like stepped in a pothole pretty much in a clear, and, I tore my patella tendon. So that was a week before I got to Ohio. I missed the entire fall that year. I think I came back like late February or March. So, you know, that was a tough time. It's a tough time to be injured when you're a freshman. I've seen it every year, you know, freshmen come in and they get an injury and have to learn how to be a great teammate without practicing, and it's a tough thing to do. We had a really tight-knit team that year, and had a really great class, so I didn't really have any problems with that. We had a really great goalie room. Our goalie that year was Tom Carey, who was my older bro, and he was an All-American senior that year. So the idea was that as long as Tom was in there, I was going to redshirt. So that's how I got my first year of eligibility back. And that was a really special year. You know, we lost to Maryland three times, which still stings, but getting to the Final Four, especially at Gillette Stadium, as a Boston kid, practicing on that field, Bill Belichick's out there, some Patriots guys are out there, and you just can't beat it. And then, we beat Towson 11-10 in the semi, and then we dropped a big one, but it was, that was a never forget experience for sure. That was really cool.
Yeah, I bet. That's awesome. Was Rabel out there, by the way?
No Rabel that year. No Rabel that year.
Oh man. Hey Rabel, remember me?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I let him know I made it.
Yeah, exactly. How was it for you? So you broke both your thumbs in high school from shots, I imagine, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Wow. I've seen a lot of top thumb breaks. You're right-handed goalie, so a lot of right thumb breaks, but left thumb breaks are a little less common, but shot just caught you in the wrong spot, huh?
Yeah, I think it was like an off stick thing.
Yeah.
And it just was higher than I expected, and it caught me. I think you can see the scar there, but I've had surgery on both my thumbs now too, so I've been one of the more unlucky guys with the thumbs. I know guys guys like me who have just, their thumbs have been through the ringer. And then I know guys who have never even sprained their thumb in 10 years of playing goalie. So I think there's some luck to it.
Totally.
We used to wear, we wear casts, like legit casts in our thumbs, in our gloves too. I know we did at Ohio. I did last year at Hopkins. This year I'm not, but they break despite that.
Wow.
Guys shoot pretty hard. So
yeah. It was like a cast like built into there, or you would like put it on your thumb and then put your thumb into the glove.
Yeah. So they mold the cast to your thumb, and then you put you put it into the glove.
Got it.
Yeah, and then it kind of you can like keep it in there, or you can take it out, but it's portable. So
yeah, cool. How is it for you? So and then you had the knee injury, right? And then I think there's another injury in your career as well later on. But how is it for you coming back mentally, right? Because if you take any time off as goalie, it's kind of hard to jump back in there, right? It's kind of like, you got to get used to the speed of the game, get used to these shots, get that feeling of flinching or hitching out of your system. How is it for you mentally coming back from those injuries?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I remember, I had another injury, after my senior year, that was a shoulder surgery. And I just, it's tough to come back, and it takes time, and you just have to commit to, at the end of the day, like if you really love taking shots and you really love the process, then it won't be that hard for you. You gotta find a way to like forgive yourself for not being perfect, because when you come back, you're gonna have to relearn some stuff, and you're gonna have to change some stuff around, and it's not gonna be perfect, and it's not gonna be, you're not gonna live up to your expectations on day one or week one, and you got to be able to give yourself some slack. I know, some of the times I've struggled the most is I put a lot of pressure on myself, not only in general, but especially coming back from injuries, when you come back and you're like, all right, I'm back. Now I need to get back to the level that I'm at, I know I can be at. And you kind of start rushing yourself. And
yeah,
that's not the path to success. I think you got to let go of that a little bit and try and focus on just enjoying it. And the more you enjoy it, the more you're going to want to take shots too. And the more you want to take shots, the more shots you get, the faster you're going to come back. So it kind of all comes back around full circle. But the main thing I would say is when you're coming back from an injury is just to not put too much pressure on yourself and, cut yourself a break a little bit, because it's not easy what you're doing. And, you know, it's a long road, but it's worth it.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. It kind of reminds me, like, you know, if you go to the gym and like you get to a certain scene, you're like, I can bench 225. Right. And then you have an injury and then you get back in the gym. Right. You're like, I know I can bench 225 and you want to do that so bad. Right. Cause you know, that's where you were, but you can't, right. You got to start slow, build your way up and then get back to where you were and then go beyond from there.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. And like you see other guys doing it. When you get back in the gym and you're like, damn, if they can do it, I can definitely do it, you know, but that's not how it works. You can't just go back in there. You'll probably hurt yourself again. So,
yeah. 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 That's the other thing you got to worry about mentally too, is like, oh, my thumbs are broken. Like, or my knees hurt, my shoulders hurt. Like, you know, it's this mental thing of like, is that going to happen again? And like, you're kind of playing right. with that. Did that happen to you?
Yeah. Yeah. That happened to me with my thumb. I started the first 8 or 9 games, I think, and then we were playing at Rutgers, and I shattered my top thumb, I think, and it was the first or second shot of the game. And by the fourth quarter, it was just too swollen. I couldn't, you know, I had to come out. But I ended up getting surgery on the thumb. And, you know, it wasn't the first time I'd hurt my thumb. And I started thinking, like, you know, sometimes it's luck. Sometimes maybe there's something you can switch up. So now I actually changed the way I hold the head. So now my thumb is on the back. I hold my thumb on basically where the screw is.
Interesting.
And it feels a lot more comfortable for me now. So there are adjustments you can make. On the flip side of that, like when I hurt my shoulder, you know, I tore my labrum and my rotator cuff, my junior year. And then, you know, it was hard for me to get that range of motion back going off stick. So I started to play with coming over the top more, but eventually you just get that motion back and you just have to be patient and let it come back and let your muscle memory come back in its own time. And that's a really hard thing for a goalie coming off an injury to deal with. I think like you want to, you know, you come back and something's not working like it used to, and you're trying to figure out like how to compensate for it. But sometimes it just takes time and, you know, getting your footwork back, getting your hand speed back, and like there's no shortcut for that either. It's just kind of time. So I think there's a mix of both.
We're back.
All right, there we go. It should be better now.
I'll ask it again. I was sort of asking, like, you got your thumb back here, which to me, like the off stick going under makes that a little bit more uncomfortable with the wrist rotation, but maybe you solved that by always going over the top. I don't know. I was curious about that.
Yeah. So, it's kind of just an adjustment. The way that I think about off stick stuff, and obviously your muscle memory kicks in and it's not always going to be the same, but like if you think about the entire net as a pizza pie, and when you're coming under, you might have heard this before, but when you're coming under, you know, it takes 6 slices to get there. When you're coming over the top, it only takes 2 or 3. So off stick hip, you know, in that range, I think it's faster to come over the top. That's kind of how I rep those extra reps. And I, you know,
yeah,
sometimes I'm even coming over the top on off stick low now. I might be faster at it. So that might be also a product of switching it, but your wrist kind of adjusts to it. And, you know, thumb on the back when you're coming off stick, it almost helps. A lot of goalies are taught, like, when you come off stick, instead of keeping your stick straight, once you have it, like, it's a little wrist cradle to kind of maintain rebound control. It almost does that naturally when you're holding it like that. But ultimately, like, the way your top hand is just comes down to comfort. I know guys who hold it all the way on the throat. I know guys who hold it on the shaft right below the throat.
Yeah.
Whatever works for you. I don't think you should change that. I think that's kind of one thing that's set in stone. You can change like your knee height or how high your stick is, but whatever is most comfortable for you on the throat is I wouldn't change it unless you have thumb surgery 2 times.
give yourself an exception. So do you end up gripping the plastic, gripping the throat like with your hand, or are you like just touching it?
Yeah, I was actually looking at a picture of another one of your guys, McElroy. Like he holds it like almost at the top of the throat. I'm not up there. I'm kind of on the bottom of the throat. My thumb is like pretty much on the screw, and then the top part of my hand is on the bottom part of the throat. So definitely not on the throat still, but
yeah,
not all the way up, like onto the bottom part of the head.
Love it. Love it. So you end up, you end up starting Ohio State the year after that and having, or maybe starting the final 7 games, it said, or even having 3 successful years there. I don't know, any cool stories we need to hear about Ohio State?
Yeah. So I ended up breaking through the lineup my sophomore year. I think it was like 5 or 6 games in that, whatever. Yeah. What you said sounds right. I remember it was at Denver. And we lost that game, but you know, that was my first time playing in a Division I game, so I won't forget that. I think, you know, there's a lot of cool highlights I could mention. Beating number 1 Maryland at Maryland was a good one. But my favorite one was probably at Notre Dame. My junior year, that one went to OT, and I don't know, I blacked out, but I think I made a doorstep save in overtime, and we came down after that and scored, and I got the ball for that one. So I don't remember it. I couldn't tell you how I made the save, but that one always sticks out to me. So
it's awesome. I'll have to find that clip.
Yeah. I'll send it to you. I got it.
Oh, you got it? Yeah, send it to me for sure.
Yeah, I will.
I love it. So you get to, I guess, 2020, and you realize like, hey, I still got another year of eligibility to play lacrosse because I redshirted. But you had like, hey, you know, how did Johns Hopkins come into the mix for you?
Yeah, so I ended up, you know, 2020 came along. We had a really good team that year. I think we were 6-2. We had just beaten Notre Dame at home. You know, that was a strong team, and that was our last game. That's when the season got canceled, which was tough. And I was, you know, thinking about just being done. And then I realized we got the second year back, excuse me, and it kind of opened up now with 2 years of eligibility. Not just a lacrosse decision, but it kind of opened up some opportunities for me to, I was a business student in undergrad, so it opened up some doors for me to look at some MBA programs, and maybe lacrosse could help me get into a really good grad school. That was kind of the thinking behind that. You know, Ohio didn't have the 2-year program for kids right out of undergrad. And funny enough, Coach Kester, who is the guy who I mentioned before, who recruited me to Ohio State, had just taken the job at the D coordinator job at Hopkins. And not long after that, he gave me a call. And, you know, he was a guy who was super important to me and my family in the process. And I always wanted to play for him, not to mention the academics and the tradition at Hopkins. So it all kind of fell into place for me, but that's how I ended up at Hopkins. And it was an awesome decision. It's been an awesome 2 years, so definitely no regrets there.
Love it, man. Love it. So this is your final year, or you have one more?
Yeah, this is the last one.
We'll see.
Yeah.
So one thing I was going to ask you about is, you know, with the extra year in high school, you know, the redshirt year, the COVID year. I mean, you got to be the oldest guy on the team. Maybe the oldest guy out there in D1 lacrosse.
I was just going to say, I might be one of the oldest guys in D1 lacrosse.
Yeah. Well, are you like 25? 20?
Yep, 25. 25. There's actually another one of our captains, Jack Line. He's my age too, so I'm not alone.
But, okay. You guys are the elder statesmen out there.
Yeah, we're the elder statesmen of college lacrosse right now. The Charlotte Beaties of 2022.
I love it. Well, do you ever, I don't know. Do you feel like that carries some weight? Like, do you feel like these 18-year-old kids come in and like, you've got a lot more experience than them. You've been through a lot more, do you feel like you feel a responsibility to kind of show them the ropes?
Yeah, I think there's a balance of that. I think leadership for younger guys is not, we definitely have the experience to do it, but it's a team dynamic, and I don't think it should matter whether you're a sixth year or a senior or even a sophomore. But I think the most glaring thing is as a sixth year, it's really kind of slowed down a little bit when you're getting time as a freshman and sophomore and you're practicing at a level that you haven't before, and it feels really fast, and you don't understand why you're getting chewed out one day, or you don't understand how the intensity is so high. And when you're a sixth year senior, you kind of understand the why behind everything you're doing, and hard things seem a little bit less scary, and fast shooters seem a little bit less fast because you've been seeing them for 6 years in my case, but things just slow down a little, and I think it helps you just appreciate where you are and just enjoying it. You just enjoy it a little more, I think, as a grad student than you do as a freshman towards the end rather than at the beginning.
Yeah, it does. It makes perfect sense. It's also true, like I would say, or at least for me anyways, by the time I got to my senior year, like I had figured out just like everything, how to do it, like how to manage, university. Like I think I was working at like a part-time job, playing lacrosse, like coaching, but because, I had been through, like, there's no way I could do that as a freshman, right? Just because it's so new and your time management. But then by the time you're 4 years into it, you're like, all right, I know exactly how this is done. This is the study time. Like this is lacrosse time. Right. And you just learn the ropes.
Right. You figured out how to get your work done. You figured out like how to eat before the run test. You figured out, all these little things that end up making a big difference. So,
yeah, you figure out when to get your partying in and when to not get your partying in, So there you go. Well, cool. I thought we could just go through a few saves. I know we're running a little long here. So thank you for doing this. It's awesome. If you want, I can share some clips and just talk about some saves if that works for you.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So this is from earlier this year against Georgetown. Yep. So I wanted to take a look at this one real quick. You can see this. Yeah.
He will shoot this.
Yeah.
To his left-hand side. Oh, what a weapon of a shot by Bundy, and it saved heroically.
I love these announcers. They use that like 3 or 4 times, like the heroic, the heroicness. Awesome, it's saved heroically. I don't know if I ever made a heroic save, but that is a pretty heroic save, if you ask me. Yeah, well, you just did. Anyway, so let me see if I can. Yeah, so there you kind of see like looking at the stance, right? Like pretty yep. wide base, yep. as we were talking about earlier. Flat arc, right? I mean, you're maybe heels on the goal line. And yeah, this is, if you got the audio, just got the audio going, it's probably like a 12 yarder, hands-free shot, low and outside corner, and bam, you get over there. Sort of a lateral step, I'd say, on that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think all my steps are, my steps are geared towards efficiency, and I believe in the explosiveness too, but I also believe in, getting to the ball as fast as you can and with the least amount of motion. I think one of the biggest things for myself is how can I eliminate unnecessary movements? And when I step laterally, I think I can get there faster with less motion. So that's why probably most of the saves that you'll see that I make are more almost just a straight lateral step than out to the wall.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And it even like, it's kind of interesting. Like you check it right there, right? He's winding up to shoot and watch your hips, like boom, the hips drop. Like you can already see this is coming in low pretty much right on the release, huh? Like, are you reading that as a low shot? And then my first move is just kind of like sink down in my stance to get low, to get down there with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a tendency to sink in general. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've had to work through. I think for this one, I'm definitely reading the stick and, I'm just trying to get any piece of the ball I can. This is a good shooter in transition, and making the first save, it gets talked about a lot, but is really important. And coming off a good warm-up, you just want to get that first one. So I'm just trying to read the stick and explode as fast as I can. And then, that's a good save. And I got the first one, and then you're feeling pretty good. So, just trying that one, the first one, you're just trying to get any part of it you can.
Yeah. Yeah. So crucial. 0-0 games just started. Like, you get a great save on your very first save. And now you're like, all right, like kind of calms the nerves a little bit,
right?
Get into it. The other thing I love too, and this was a part of my game, is like, I always, regardless of what was going on, started to chase out the shot, right? Like, you start to chase out the shot, it's kind of clear that this guy's going to beat you to it. Like, you know, he's way ahead, but it's just that natural reaction of like, shots going out, I'm going to go, I'm like, immediately my first instinct is to chase it out regardless of what's going on, because that'll end up winning you some possessions. In fact, we're going to watch one where it does win you a possession in a second here. But has that always been a part of your game?
Yeah, we can talk about it when the clip comes up, but I've played for coaches in college where diving out shots has not been really negotiable. So I have to pick my spots, because I don't do it on every single one, because if I know that there's an attackman back there, I might not do it. But anyone where I think that I have a chance, and I didn't dive at that one, but I think, that's another thing as a 6-year with a lot of experience, I think I've gotten pretty good at recognizing when I will have a chance at it. And my dives are not pretty, as you're about to see. It's not very graceful, but it actually does win a possession in this game. And most of them it doesn't work, but it also sets a tone, and it shows that this guy in the net is doing everything he can and he cares. And this past week at Carolina, I think it was my career high in saves, but I think I dove out one or two in that one too. So it's been working for me. And I think it gets other guys wanting to dive too, which is, when you talk about like why you like playing goalie and earning that respect and trust, I think that is a big part of it. And, you don't move that much, but any effort that you can give does have a effect on other guys. So I do it more just to show guys that I care and we want this. And, it's not going to win me that many, and I get made fun of and filmed for doing it sometimes, but it's well worth it if I can get one possession back in a game.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, to be fair, like, you don't chase out every shot. Like what I'm talking about is like, watch your movement here. It is kind of going back, and then you realize, like I'm not, there's no way I'm winning that one enough. Like, I know enough to, but yeah. All right. So
always looking for it.
Yeah, this is actually the play. This is actually the play right here. So I don't even run this.
Noon. Kind of weave one around.
Yeah, so you can see it.
And it.
Yeah.
I'm just laughing now. I'm just laughing now. You get laughed in the room. But look, you made it,
Exactly. It's not pretty, but you can see on the shot, I step out a little bit. I've been doing that at low angles, I think, as a big kid. I can take away some of what they're looking at, and better, if I know what I'm taking away, I know where it's more likely they're going to be. So I get this one off my lower body, kind of stepping out. You can see I'm on that goal mouth, and I read the stick well. It hits me and starts going out. And this is that experience. I know that there's no one back there since he just dove for mech. So this is an opportunity where I can go get it. You know, there's that graceful dive, but even if it's close, I think one thing that people have to understand is refs kind of do take it into account subconsciously. So he might, you know, if you pull out the yardstick, it's probably pretty close in yards, but I might have gotten it just because I dove.
For sure. Effort.
In this scenario.
Yeah.
So,
yep, exactly.
Yeah. I don't even know if the dive helped me, but it, you know, it showed the refs that I'm going for this one and they saw me last. So I got it.
Yeah. Great play. I was going to ask you about this step out move right here. So, which you talked about, but you know, if you're on the audio only, like the guy's driving around from X, right? And he kind of he gets a little bit topside or just a hair. He crosses GLE. And then at that point, you know, instead of a lot of goalies here, just hold that pipe, right? And just kind of take that shot from there. You take a step out, right? And it's just really cut down the angle. I think what you're saying is, you know, you're a big dude. 6'2", I think is what you're listed at, right? Like over 200 pounds. So like I'm going to come out and then just really cut off what this shooter can shoot at. Right. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, exactly. And like, if you're looking at it, you know, I'm 6'2", like 210. But I play in a pretty low stance, but if you're looking at it from the perspective of the head, if you're looking at his head, it's not up by his helmet. He's not shooting it overhand. He's kind of got that sidearm release. So if you're looking at the head, even though I'm not standing straight up and I've come out, it's going to be really hard for him from that angle to lift it into the top of the crease, especially because if you're looking at the head from where I am, like he's probably below it. So for him looking up into the net, I'm probably taking up even more of the top of the net than it looks like on the screen from this angle.
Totally
it's
going
to be really hard for him to lift that up as well.
Exactly.
So and it's going to be hard for him to put it back near pipe because I've stepped out and I'm taking away that near pipe. So I've eliminated a couple of regions where, you know, he can shoot and then I can just kind of read the stick. He tried to go low. I've got that covered because I kind of know that's one of the only spots he's got left.
Yeah. At what point are you stepping out? Is there a certain point where you do it or it's just like a feel?
Yeah. So this is something I've had to work through and it's definitely a feel. You know, it could be from dodges underneath on the wing. It could be from X, but you kind of have to practice this until you can get a feel of when the dodger's kind of turning the corner and shooting, because it can really put you out of position if you don't do it the right way. And I've certainly gotten scored on like that. Mm-hmm. So this is something where, you know, he kind of gained a full head of steam, and turned the corner at GLE. And, this is a feel thing that takes time and, I'm definitely not perfect at it still. I think two times this year have come out and they've thrown it to the back pipe and, you know, that's not all on me because guy, the back pipe shouldn't be open, but, it's bit me a couple times and I'm still getting better at it, but I think more times than not, it helps me. So I think it's a worthy risk.
Yeah. Yeah. You're saying sometimes like he's actually passed it back here and then you're all the way up here. That's real tough to get back there.
Right.
But
so
yeah,
it's
a risk you're willing to
take. That
guy
was already at the back pipe and the guy covering him was still worried about sliding. Mm-hmm. That's going to be really tough for me to get back from the top of the goal mouth to the other pipe. That's happened two times this season, but you know, it's a feel and more times than not, I think it's working for me. So
yeah, love it. And then I love the celebration right here. I mean, you chase out, win a possession like that. You got to clap, give a little,
especially at the beginning of the game, you know,
true, yeah.
We're winning one back. We want to show some emotion, show them, we came to play. And it gets the sideline going and the sideline has a big effect on the game. If they're into it, 100%. You know, they're going to be up for us and we should show them we're up for them too. So,
yeah, I was going to ask you about this head. You got the ghost pocket there, huh? No shooters.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, I got it strung and there were no shooters in it and I started throwing with it. And it was throwing really well. In the past week or so, I think it rained all week last week. So I've now put a shooter and a nylon in there, but, you know, it's whatever, whatever is throwing well for me at the time. I think I'm not that picky with the setup. I've changed, you know, between U's and straights throughout my career. And I've changed between small diamond and big diamond and, whatever, you know, I feel like I can, when I feel like I can throw it without even thinking about it, that's what I'll use. I'm not that picky about it. So I'll change it whenever it doesn't work anymore.
There you go. Let's go 148. Check out the save.
Fence. Decent look here. Shot coming this time from Dylan Watson.
Nice save. So yeah, this is another example where the guy's driving from X, and this is kind of a cool angle too on the step out. So you kind of get to the pipe and then you can see right there, you step out.
Right.
And yeah. But then in this clip, he ends up passing it. Right. So now it's like, all right, I gotta get square up on this guy. And that's a pretty close shot. Hands free. Bam. Nice save. I think it catches
right,
you in the
leg. Yeah. So I think this is an example of, I think, where stepping out can really work in that, you know, as long as it's not going back pipe and you're staying and the ball is staying on that side of the field, even though he passes it up top, I'm not really that out of position. I'm just further out and cutting off more angle. So I'm losing maybe a millisecond of reaction time, mm-hmm. but I am cutting off more angle to equalize that out. So it's kind of a quick release. I'm set and I'm ready for the ball. Like I'm ready to attack the ball. And even though I'm further out, I'm not actually out of position. So, I'm able to, you know, kick my leg out and my stick out and, get a piece on that one. And after getting the first one, feeling pretty good. So that's another, that definitely plays into it too. The better you feel, the more explosive you are.
It's true. It's true. Are you on those off stick saves, like off stick low? Is that a technique you always use? Is kind of get that leg? I mean, some people call it flopping, but it's kind of just getting that leg behind the ball. Or, I mean, is that a technique that like you practice, or is this kind of like I'm in the game, I'm gonna do whatever I can to make the save?
Yeah, I'm not a floppy goalie normally. I'm much more of a finish the step kind of, you know, mm-hmm. a little bit. I'm older, so I didn't learn, you know, it's actually being taught now, flopping. And I don't think it's the worst thing. I wasn't taught that way, but, you know, in tight in games, I was taught like you do anything you can to, at the end of the day, you do whatever you can to keep it out. So, no, normally if you see me in practice or, you see me make like a routine stave, it'll always be step, finish the step. I try not to end up on my butt all that much, but, you know, these in tight ones, do whatever you can.
There you go. Yep. There you go. Yeah. It's funny. I did a little mini camp with Tillman Johnson, you know, speaking of older goalies and like that, you know, hit that technique is exactly what I learned as well. Like the flopping is, it works. Like, I mean, there's, you know, it works. And if that's your style, great, you know, do it. But sure. It certainly wasn't taught like it is being taught these days.
Yeah.
Cool. 314.
But here they are on the offense, turning one around. Oh, another decent effort being thrown on by Connor Morin. But yet again, it's the keeper and Josh Kirsten who got in the way.
Yeah, Kirsten just went stick on stick right.
He didn't use the word heroic on that one, unfortunately. on these ones, so the guy catches it at X. He's coming around, and he just does like a shovel shot. Like he's almost not even looking at the goal. You know what I mean? How do you at this? It's so tough because he's so close. It's like you almost just have to read the stick of where he's shooting and react, right? Or how do you approach these type of saves?
Yeah, these ones are tough and. Not too much to say about it, but you practice it as much as you can. And when you see that release and you see weird releases coming, you just try and match your head on their head. That's kind of what happened here. I don't even think I needed to move my head that much because it ended up just kind of coming straight into my pocket. But I just, I'm trying to read his head and match him. And that's what goalies at the D1 level are really good at doing.
Yep. Love it. A couple more. Let's see here. There's one right
think this is the one. No, not 415, 425.
Face and underarm right. going on out there.
And how about the Hopkins fans making their way down from Baltimore, too? They're in numbers.
Tremendous crowd.
Throwing one on, and Bundy denied again behind the back.
That was a pretty sick play by that guy.
That was. It's a Hill Academy. That's a Hill Academy product right there.
Is it? Yeah. So if you got the audio, like the guy takes a, I think this is a bounce shot, right? I can't really see the.
Yeah, that's a bounce. That's a high bouncer. And I do a pretty good job of reading it, but you can see I'm kind of sitting back on it. And that might be a reason why the rebound is pretty favorable there. Cause I'm kind of sitting on it. Probably could have been a little bit more explosive. It might've affected the rebound, but you know, that's a pretty heads up play.
Yeah. That was a great play by that guy. He ends up catching it and catching the rebound out of the air and finishing it behind the back. Yeah. So this step right here. So you're on your arc, you're lined up like on this guy, right? And then they pass it to the top right. And the step for you is sort of back, right? So now like your left foot kind of drops into the goal squared up on that guy, which is kind of cool. If if you're a goalie who is going to play the flat arc, like study these moves, right? Cause that's one thing I love about the flat arc is like just one little step and we are now in perfect position to take a shot from this guy.
Yeah, I think if you're learning to play the flat arc, I learned it in my early days at Ohio State. The flat arc is generally a three-step arc with a couple of drop steps in it. Mm-hmm. So like, you usually if you're playing flat, you normally have a wider base, and it shouldn't take you that many steps to get from pipe to pipe in your entire arc. But most of the keys to playing a flat arc is just always having your hips square to the shooter. So you might not always be in the same spot, but if you drop step and then your hips are square, you're normally going to be taking up a pretty good amount of the cage and be in a pretty good spot. And that's what I like about it is, I was talking about earlier being really efficient. I think the flat arc lends itself to that. There's a lot less inconsistency in it. It's pretty simple, and you can be really efficient if you understand it well. So that drop step, I'm kind of, before I drop stepped, I'm in a position to take away that alley shot and on the pipe. And then I don't even have to take a step. I just drop step. And then I'm pretty much in the middle of the net there.
Yeah. So. Yep. It's great. Great, great breakdown. Let's take a look at one more. I think it's at 743.
One in the attacking area now. Slides one to his right hand side. Halpert was looking. Shot coming from Watson.
Oh, popcorn, baby. That's a pretty easy one. Passes it on the side, right? Just kind of, you're right there. Perfect positioning. But at the same time, like, all that talk about positioning is what makes this an easy save, right? Like the defender's carrying it down. You're lined up on him. He dishes it. Little shuffling of the feet, and now you're set up on this guy. I don't know if you have anything to add on that one.
Yeah, I think that's a good analysis, and I think it kind of almost looks like the last one, just in the reverse order. I'm in a pretty good position in the middle. I do take a small step with my left foot onto the pipe, but even there, I'm still in a pretty good position in the middle, and all I have to do when he passes it is instead of drop step, just step my foot up. And then I'm in a really good position to take away that, corner pipe spot, and he kind of puts it in my basket.
Yeah, that's a good term. Put it right in the basket. Do you, exactly. in your top hand, maybe it's just the camera angle, but like, where do you like set up? It doesn't look like it's chin. It kind of looked like it's lower than that, but it could just be this angle.
Yeah, I'm a proponent of just keeping it comfortable. And for me, comfortable is usually like head is close to my shoulders. It's not always straight. I think whatever's the most comfortable for you. I think my hands were like pretty narrow, pretty close together this game. I usually try and keep them a little bit wider than that. Usually around like bottom hand is, if the stick is straight up, bottom hand's at your at your elbow. So around there, I think it's a little bit higher in this game for whatever reason, but yeah, whatever is comfortable, I think.
Love it. Love it. Love it.
Within reason, of course.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. That was awesome. You guys don't end up winning that game, but you know, you have certainly have a long ways to go in the season. You just had a great win over Loyola. So congratulations on that.
Thanks. Yeah, no, that was awesome. And tough one last weekend against UNC. It was a good day for me. I think it was my career high in saves. But
congrats. That's awesome.
That was cool, especially as an old guy getting that. As an old guy is cool. You know, it's a little bit of, you still got it. You know, but there's no better way to rebound from a loss than go and play one of the best teams in the country. And we'll travel to UVA this weekend and, we'll keep our season going.
Love it, Josh. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking through your story, sharing some tips with the goalies. I've got, as we were talking about before we hit record, I got Grayson. I got contact with Grayson. So I got a lot of cool clips of yours. I'll be using and breaking down. If you had to leave the goalies out there with a final piece of advice, what would that be?
See it and save it. No, I think just try and enjoy the process. You know, there's a lot of bumps and bruises in this position. But you know, don't be afraid to fail and get back up, because the best goalies are usually really battle tested. Rome wasn't built in a day, so you know, if you have a bad day, just try and cut yourself a break and get back on the horse the next day and just keep going.
Love it, Josh. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So there you have it. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. That was Hopkins goalie, big Josh Kersen. Awesome, awesome stuff, I think. I got to tell you a quick story. I've got so many awesome video clips of Josh because I've been working with Grayson Johns for some of my sponsored goalies, and she's been sending me these amazing video clips of Hopkins. She now works for Hopkins full-time, so she's got some amazing clips that she's been sending me. So you might see Josh making some sweet saves if you follow me on Instagram, at Lax Goalie Rat everywhere, really. That'll do it for this week. Hope you enjoyed that episode. Lacrosse Goalie Summit 6 is here. If you haven't signed up yet, do so. GoalieSummit.com. It's a free ticket. Come enjoy 12 of the best coaches in the game, all for free. If you want to get a VIP pass for lifetime access to all the replays, you can do that. That's for under $100. It's a steal, if you ask me. Incredible value. But you can get a free ticket at GoalieSummit.com. All right, we get started March 28th on that. That's going to be a ton of fun. As always, get out there, get some work in, do well, and be well. I'm Coach Damon. Take care.
You've been listening to the Lax Goalie Rat Podcast with your host, Coach Damon Wilson.